Jason Warden is a previously unpublished writer, although he is guilty of writing many stories he doesn't have the guts to send out in exchange for rejection slips. Instead, he has jumped to the other side and now accepts and rejects stories based on his own curious preferences for an audio podcast he started some time back. The Shadowcast audio anthology has seen moderate success and continues to grow with each episode, reinforcing the idea in his clogged brain that maybe, just maybe, he might have a talent for that sort of thing. And as such, he has decided to send this in, just to test himself and see where he stands. Morgan Scorpion simply worships H.P. Lovecraft.
For a time in my life, I was trapped within the walls of my own house, not by any outside force, but by my own inability to deal with the outside world. It seems to me my reasons were not even intentional. No phobia spurred me on, nor did I feel uncomfortable around people or the outside in general. I simply wanted to live life on my own terms. The inheritance allowed me the privilege. I had always been envious of those who had a knack for art. Since earliest childhood I had been drawn to art. If my subject was in front of me, I did a fair enough job, but quite simply my mind's eye could never seem to tell my hands about the things that were not visible. My imagination seemed to have a short in it when it came to putting the pencil to paper. That is, until I found the face in the wall. After the reading of the will, I moved back in and set up my easel and supplies in the family room. Mother's rocker, where she had knitted so many old rags, I moved to her room. I left Father's chair. It was old, but comfortable, and broke in like a familiar lover. I often sat and looked out on the street to search for inspiration. I did not own a TV, and only occasionally tuned in the radio to hear weather updates. Even within the quiet, peaceful room, too often I found distractions to be the norm rather than the exception. At times I would sit down with a cigarette and watch pedestrians on the sidewalks, each of them going about their daily lives, and I would wonder about where they were headed, what dreams they had, and what their future held. I went days upon days without making a mark on canvas, and soon found myself doing nothing more than filling ashtrays and making up stories for these people on the street. The windowless basement seemed to be the surest way to force my creativity out. I would either find success or failure down there. The walls were covered in a dark wood panelling, but the floor remained completely neglected. It was still just a concrete pad, but for my purposes I thought it perfect. There were no distractions. Failure or success would be a product of my own making. The thought scared me. My easel and supplies were set up in the middle of the room. The stool was hard and unrelenting beneath me. Rarely have I felt as uncomfortable as I did in the first few hours of being in that place. Although the space was large, the walls seemed to close in. It began to feel claustrophobic, and every so often I had to get up just to assure myself of the size of the room. Eventually, I moved my supplies from the centre of the room to the corner, where I could look over my shoulder at the cavernous emptiness behind. Even as I did so, it felt right. The walls pulled away, and all at once, images of my masterpieces raced through my mind. I simply could not wait to get started. The lighting was better, richer, and I knew the colours, when eventually my work was ready for them, would explode on the canvas. I decided at the last minute to bring a lamp down from the family room. When I got back and plugged the lamp in, and found the space to be even better than it first seemed. The additional lighting helped not only the workspace, but also the overall feel of the room. Finally, at ease within my sanctuary, I sat down in front of the easel and found everything that had been pushing to get out was gone. The images, there only minutes before, had disappeared. I sat looking blankly at the canvas, my thoughts wandering, my concentration shattered. I closed my eyes, willing away the unproductive thoughts that came, and tried to harness those images that had flashed through my head. Nothing. It was as if my mind had been washed blank. I looked about the room, scanned the walls and ceiling. Whatever had set my previously uninspired mind at work was here. I knew if I could somehow get started, the rest would be a mere matter of being absorbed in the work. My masterpiece continued to elude me, so that even my conviction to hone my craft began to fade. I thought of those people outside again, their stories untold, and wished they would just leave me alone, but my mind continued to race around them like an addict after his fix. The frustration of knowing I would never be any closer to my goal unless something changed, combined with my own inability to find the needed change, threatened to unhinge me. When finally, after I had sat for what seemed like an age, I closed my mind and an image came. It was not the one I wanted to see. The eyes of my mother gazed upon me as I stood at the front window. She was standing on the sidewalk across the street. Her flesh was charred, black, and cracking open from the fire that had taken her. But it did not touch her eyes. They bore into me. I tried to open my own eyes, to release the image, but found they would not or could not open, as if something wanted me to see her, to see the disappointment and hate in her eyes. As she staggered forward, I cringed back and found I was trapped. The walls behind me had closed in, and my only means of escape were to jump through the window toward her. She shambled rather than walked. Both legs were burned black, and her torso was covered in a grey slime that I assumed was from the extinguishers the firemen had used. She held her hands over her abdomen, attempting to hold in the green and red fluid that ran over her burnt hands. I remembered them at the funeral, the blackness of those hands showing through the white gloves the mortician had put on her before the visitation. I could understand the disappointment in her eyes, even the hatred. I had never lived up to my own expectations, much less those of my mother and father. I could even understand her coming back. Somehow I always knew she would. The fire was all my fault, after all. If I'd only stayed for dinner, it never would have happened. What I could not understand were the grisly tentacles she dragged behind her. They lashed and whipped around her more fervently the closer she came to the window, as if seeing me excited them. As she drew near, I saw each ended in a single razor-edged claw, which rang each time it struck the asphalt. I watched helpless as she shambled across the street, dragging her mutated body toward the window. I pushed against the wall, and as desperation finally set in, I jumped back as one of the razors tore up a large chunk of earth in front of the window. I watched it sail through the air and screamed as it landed at the feet of my father. He was slumped, balanced precariously on his bent legs, as I would imagine a frog would be if standing upright. His jerky off-balance motions seemed gangly until he jumped and crossed what had to be 15 feet with a single bound. I fell back and knew no more. I came awake, my head throbbing with the beat of my heart. I felt around on the back of my skull and found a knot already half formed. I had fallen off the stool. The bare concrete pad had done little to break my fall. The knot was sore to the touch, but I found it a small price to pay for release from the dream. What else could I call it? Although I had not intended to go to sleep, the question begged an answer. What could I call it, if not a dream? I got back on the stool, half persuaded it had only been a dream. I tried once more to conjure the things I had seen that had so inspired me before. I received the equivalent of static from very far down on the AM band. Eventually, I was reduced to tears by the dream and my own inability. Anger and frustration all at once tore through me, and I openly cursed the room and my lack of focus. My words echoed in the empty space, and seemed to come back at me with more force than they had upon leaving my mouth. The power of it silenced my ranting. The room seemed to darken and the air chilled around me. I broke out in goose flesh, and my breath felt frozen. I let it out, expecting to see it cloud in front of my face, and although it did not, it was of little comfort. I don't know how long I stood there waiting for something to happen. The noises from upstairs broke the spell. The breaking glass was unmistakable in the stillness of the empty house, as were the footfalls that followed. It must have been my own imaginings, but I heard the sound of something being dragged across the wood floor in the kitchen. I crept to the base of the stairs and looked up, but heard nor saw anything amiss. Only the empty hallway above that led to the kitchen. I called out, and saw a shadow on the wall freeze in mid-stride. I froze, and the seconds seemed to spin out for millennia. Suddenly empowered by what, I cannot say, I shouted up the stairs. "Get out! I'm coming up! I have a gun!" I didn't, but I saw the shadow on the wall change, and all at once heard more footsteps pounding across the floor above. I ran up the stairs into the hallway, found no one, and ran into the living room only to see the door bang against the wall behind, leaving a perfect hole the size of the knob. I continued to the door and heard the wetness squelch from under my shoe. The oozing trail followed a path from the broken back window to the front door. It shimmered in the sunlight of the open door. I swept up the shards of glass, disposed of them, and laid towels over the stinking mess on the carpet. I think now that perhaps that was my last chance to stop everything before it started, but the pull proved too great. I meant to go to the phone and call the police, but found myself headed back to the basement, ignoring the small voice arguing against it. At the bottom of the stairs I stopped and looked around the room once more, really looked this time, and caught a flash of it. Even with all that had happened, my mind still grabbed hold, desperate to see it, to create it on canvas. And maybe that was the point when I began thinking of it as something alive. I thought once more of my actions as it showed itself to me the first time. I had been moving the easel from the centre of the room, and something had drawn my eyes, or my mind, to the image I was now trying so hard to conjure. I moved back to the centre of the room, retracing my steps from where I had initially set up, and looked again. Still nothing showed itself. I looked until doing so disgusted me. I thought back on the process of moving the workspace to the corner when, finally, I remembered the lamp. I rushed to the lamp, turned it off, and backed away. If I had chanted a magical spell, or God had come to show me the face himself, it would have been no clearer. The face I could only remember pieces of before sat in front of me, trapped within the wood-grain structure of the walls. Terrible as it was also beautiful, and I knew at once that my life would change from this moment on. No longer would I search, for all the inspiration I would ever need lay within its dark, greedy eyes. Once seen, it could not be unseen. I traced the lines of it with my eyes, meditating on its structure, felt for its three-dimensional shape within the two-dimensional wall. The face, a mask of terrible scars, called out for pity, sorrow, and most of all, obedience. I would like to lie and say the face was simply a random design in the wood. Perhaps even that is so. It is not inconceivable that I am completely crazy. For the sake of all humanity, I dearly hope I am. Some part of me hoped for that even as I traced the image onto canvas. The face held eyes that had been born in a place far from our world, a place so far away our sun could only be seen in periphery. From that point on I was not in control of my actions. Had I been, perhaps I would have tore the panelling from the wall and gone on to other projects. Instead, I looked at it, and was drawn inexorably further into the mind behind those eyes. I began to trace the outline onto canvas, and fill in the missing shadows to make the face wholly complete. Still, even with all my effort, nothing happened. There was no great revelation, and I felt a frustration with my work that did not come only from me, but from outside me, perhaps even from the face itself. Still, even with those feelings, it was only a drawing of a face, like a thousand others I had made during my 34 years, and while it was a bit more real, a bit more there, it was still only a combination of collected lines. I turned away from it exhausted, and began putting the tools of my craft away, when I felt a squeezing sensation on my throat. I looked around in terror, found myself alone, and really began to panic. The pressure continued to build, and was cutting off my ability to breathe. I slashed and tore at my own face, trying to rid it of the hands, even as they lifted my feet from the ground. I saw the blood on my hands from the self-inflicted wounds, and as my vision darkened, I heard a voice, aloud or in my own head I could not tell which, that brought me back just a bit. It spoke only one word, and after it had spoken the pressure ceased as quickly as it had begun, and dropped me to the ground. I lay on the concrete floor, letting it cool my cheek like a mother's home remedy. I tried to rationalize my feelings. They were confused, harried, and disorganized, but for the first time something tangible rested on my ability. After long thought, eventually, that comforted me. I sat back on my stool and studied the image again. Many times that night I stared at it for vast spans of time, wondering how I could have missed it. Many times I saw not the face, but the terrible and wonderful places it had been. I watched as it walked with legions of followers, each begging simply for a glance into the face he hid behind that black cloak. A chorus of tortured voices rang out across the vast expanse behind him. I felt their need, their adoration, for I wanted more than anything to see his face, to know him, to be by his side when it all came to an end. Nyarlathotep, they chanted. Although the desert barren wasteland they were in was void of features, their cries echoed back, and even as it did, the starved, sun-blasted followers began another in earnest. It seemed all of space was consumed by their chants. I watched, and remembered the place as if I had been there before, as if we all had. The thought that arose was that my soul and those of the legions had been around for eons. They had been exalted, tortured, hated and feared. Yet I personally had no prior memory of it. I watched as he led them over a small rise, and even as I saw them follow, I knew he was already gone. I felt the loss they felt. Their cries, as they looked upon the place of their abandonment, changed from one of adoration to one of misery and grief. He had led them to this place, only to leave them to wander the waste. Not so he could watch them die, but to watch them go mad. I think I heard him laughing, far off behind the heat haze of the horizon. I pulled my eyes away from the wall, only to have them yanked back by a force I knew was not my own. I watched as the lines on the wall spread to form an enormous grin, one so wide it would split any face that tried to wear it. I staggered back and fell over my stool. Lying on the concrete, I once more looked up at the face, expecting it to jump upon me, and saw it had not moved, nor had it changed. My overworked mind was playing tricks. I tried to force myself to believe that. In my last act of free will, I got up, turned, and started towards the stairs. I thought I could make it to the safety and sanity of my front room window. Then the pressure on my throat began again, and with it came the voice. It seemed to come from everywhere. The pressure inside the room seemed to double, then treble with the force of it. I found myself wondering if anyone else could hear it, for it seemed so loud that even those on the far side of the sidewalk, or town, or the universe, would hear and go screaming from it, leaving me alone in the world with this misbegotten thing. I continued the work, for I had no alternative. My fear had put me in a state of anxiety akin to what I imagine one trapped within a rolled-over car would feel at the smell of gasoline. I knew I couldn't even hope to grasp the depth of the evil that emanated from the face, and though success and failure seemed to end at the same place, I wanted to breathe a while longer. I spent hours retracing each line, searching for the three-dimensional shape of the thing. Each discovery took hours, and I felt as though I would never finish. The shading was tricky, perhaps the hardest thing I've ever done. Every smudge threatened to destroy the work I had accomplished, leaving me to erase and at least partly begin again. When the last bit of shading was complete, I stepped away from the canvas and inspected the work. Although the entire event had drained me considerably, and the fear had not abated, I was excited and proud of the creation. It was dark, menacing, but still. I expected it to come striking out from the shadows, to envelop me in pain without warning, yet nothing happened. I moved closer, constantly changing the perspective, searching for what was missing. I knew something was supposed to happen upon completion, but the more my eyes searched the surface, the further from complete it felt. I sat upon the stool, staring at the face, but trying to avoid the eyes which seemed to bury themselves in my mind. They had before taken me to a place of desolation, waste and despair. I did not intend to go back. "I can't finish it," I thought. These words had no more than skipped across the surface of my brain when I was thrown to the ground, physically thrown, and found myself lying on the floor beneath the easel. I looked up at the ceiling of the basement and stifled a scream. A black swirling shape was poised above, and I saw it was descending toward me. The form was hypnotic. I could not stop looking into the endless blackness. Tortured, twisted shapes swam, moving in and out of the twisted vortex in my mind. Tortured, twisted shapes swam in and out of the moving vortex, and from somewhere inside my mind, I heard their screams. Frightened I was. Only a fool would not be. But I also found I was beyond fear. For, as the blackness swept toward me, I lay still, and allowed it to take me willingly rather than by force. Remembering the savage looks on the faces of those left to wander the waste, I understood resistance would be a futile engagement. I spun away into the blackness, as the swirling mouth of darkness first grabbed hold tightly, as if expecting a fight, then seemed to release me to the winds that it carried within its core. The visions I saw there were unnameable creatures, created from the very ether, and surely long extinct in our world. These things, if they ever existed at all, did so within the mind of a lunatic. I can only say they were part bird, part octopus. They carried bloody, ravaged carcasses in their razor beaks, and although I could name parts and pieces of their bodies, seeing them in their entirety, I could not imagine what type of god had created them, and to what purpose. I watched as it tore hunks from the flesh and strew them about. They never ate the flesh, only tore at it. I looked closely at the unidentifiable carcass, and saw its open eyes still shimmering with life. Not the eyes of a tortured soul, but those of one happy to fulfil their purpose. Not being of a religious mindset, I was nevertheless appalled by the blasphemy.